Hello?
Welcome back, listeners.
Hello.
Well, we have done it. We have made it to season two. Season two of Steven Universe, Not So Giant Women, Derry and Ivy. We're going to check out, what's the name of this episode? Full Disclosure.
Full Disclosure, yeah.
How could I forget it? So that's what we're doing today. So it kind of gets less and less fair to ask you for predictions as we go on, but any guesses on what needs to be disclosed or to whom?
It could be like a kind of debrief from all the action of the past two-parter and everything leading up to it.
Mm-hmm.
There was probably still some details the characters want to shuffle in the order, into order. We last saw Connie calling Steven, so...
That is right.
Maybe one of them is going to disclose something over the phone.
Aha. Yeah, that's where we left, standing on a burning beach with a phone call.
So here we go.
Here we are.
Yay! Are the crystal gems, we'll always save the day.
Kiddo, there you are. Oh, hey, Connie, do you need a ride home?
Oh, Dad, are you doing okay?
I got it out of my system. I'm back to being your cool dad.
All right.
Nice little wrap up, huh?
Yeah, and another batch of feelings for us there.
Yeah.
Thank you, Master Universe and Miss Maheshwaran.
Yes, they're always so sweet together.
Oh.
Tell the people what happened. Woo!
Yeah, well, I had some little heartbreak moments in there. Okay, but let's see if we can recap. We start pretty much exactly where we left off. We're still on the burning beach, the green fires all around, you know, very nice looking color scheme. Connie is trying to call Steven. He starts to what happened, but Greg turns up and he's like, oh, I'll call you back. Steven relates what happened the past few episodes to Greg in the manner of it was all a big adventure. And Greg's reaction is much more in line with, oh my goodness, my son was kidnapped and they tried to kill him and his friends and they might try to kidnap or kill him and his friends again and
yeah,
all sorts of things. And he kind of freaks out a bit, understandably. Goes back to his van, tries to put his relaxing music on. He does not. Though I confess I wondered if that was going to be this constitutes relaxing music for Greg gag. Steven has started to realize that, oh, maybe this isn't the fun adventure I thought it was, and starts to brood. He goes up to the clifftop to brood, and Ronaldo joins him there, actually making far more sense than he usually does about taking on a burden and trying to protect the muggles, if you will. Steven sings a song about the burden he's got and how he wants to keep Connie safe from it. So he's going to try to, well, his immediate plan is just to not answer Connie's phone calls and keeps pressing ignore on his mobile. And I thought he was about to chuck his mobile into the sea, but he doesn't.
I guess. Thought the same thing.
I guess he needs it later. Skulks back home and the gems are talking about how people are returning to town and they'll need to clean up the mess and debris. And there's a brief discussion about building a moat to keep people out and therefore safe, and Amethyst wants to be the crocodile, and Pearl admonishes her because she always says she'll be the crocodile but doesn't commit. And there are just little bits of peak Pearl and Amethyst going on this week, just in the midst of all the heavy stuff.
So good.
Steven says he no longer needs to see his father or his friends or the other town folk because he has a duty and a destiny, and he's gone full 90s Batman about how this is a path he must tread alone and can't afford relationships or people will get hurt. And he's even going to screen out Connie, which Amethyst points out is going to be hard as she's coming up the stairs. While Pearl and Garnet are distracting Connie at the front door, Steven sneaks out the window. I guess the almost kiss healing didn't work on her peripheral vision because he just gets past her and down the beach. And well, this is for naught because when Connie goes to leave herself, she spots Steven trying to get away, runs after him into a cluster of debris where there's more bits of ship than otherwise. Steven tries to hide, but when Connie tries to call him, of course, his phone goes off and she knows he's there. He sends her a text message saying, I don't want to be friends anymore. Connie is in tears, but basically calls out, I don't believe you. Come and say that to my face. And after a bit of back and forth, Steven does come out and His face is lowered, half in shadow. When he raises his head, he's crying like no one's business. And he says, of course he wants to be friends, and explains that this is because he wants to keep people safe, etc. business. And after a bit of time skip, things have calmed down. He's explained the story to Connie, and everyone's a bit calmer, probably for having gotten the story out and shared the burden. And Greg just pulls up behind them conveniently. And Greg said he got it out of his system. He's feeling better, ready to be the cool dad again. And for now, it's time to move forward and to go home. And that is the full disclosure. I guess full disclosure was Stephen disclosing to Connie.
Yep. And Greg, I guess, in his way, but...
yeah, I guess he just closed a little too fully, too quickly for poor Greg.
Yeah. Oh, no, they were much stronger than us, and they almost killed us.
Yes, they're an interplanetary menace. They could wipe us off the face of the Earth with nary a blink, and they're particularly after me and, by association, my friends and family.
Yeah, in the commentary, they think I'm mom.
Yeah.
That must have blown Greg's mind.
Yeah, but I do like how that goes unchallenged, that this is, okay, I guess this is just a thing homeworld gems do. Yeah, they mix up children with their mothers.
Yeah, they don't, I mean, they're looking at, that's the gem is them. It doesn't matter what's around it, that's you. That's rose quartz.
Yeah, well, I think we brushed this last week, that this is the sort of thing that may happen with a shape-shifting society, that you need to be able to have some kind of backup way of identifying people than just looking at them.
Yeah, though clearly it was not immediately obvious. It's not like they have some kind of sense to understand who each other are. So that was pretty cool that, you know, Jasper didn't just automatically recognize Stephen until she saw his powers. So, but yeah, I don't think that Stephen's dad is really going to get that because he has no context for that.
I think even if he does, Stephen's still his son. And even if these marauders have entirely sound reasons for thinking he's his mother and thus take him away, it's not going to be good news to him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not good news at all. Yeah.
And I think I said it in the recap, though, but the first minute or two with the color effects of everyone on the burning beach at, I guess, it was supposed to be a kind of twilightish time of the day. Gave some very nice color.
Yeah, so got that sort of creepy vibe to it.
Yeah. Amethyst shattering the creepiness a bit with her trying to celebrate. But that's your Amethyst.
Oh, that was an adorable scene, wasn't it? She's just giving him a noogie and picking up Pearl. That's enough celebrating. It's adorable.
And Garner being a bit, oh, we've had the big moment. It's time to move forward and clean things up now.
Yeah, she's, you know, her reaction to Pearl saying that could have gone a lot worse was it could have gone a lot better too. So she's doing that whole pragmatic action to things. And it's like, well, now it's time to get the next job done.
There's only so much to be done for dissecting what happened. We've got to see what's still left over, which might be a fusion at the bottom of the sea and Peridot out there somewhere.
Yeah, super intimidating to think, like, not only have they just been through all of this stuff and they have to clean up the mess, but they have two threats to deal with now. They've got Peridot out there somewhere and a hate fusion under the sea somewhere.
Yeah, and Peridot on her own might not be terribly intimidating, but for all we know, she can just call up Homeworld and say, send another hand, things are getting heavy.
Oh, yeah, that's true. There's not really any information at this point as to what tools she might have access to or, you know, how she might be able to contact anyone.
Yeah. Well, you'd think an escape pod would have at least some kind of communication stuff in it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you would hope. It seems like it should be able to do more than just escape. They don't know where it came down and they don't know what Peridot is going to do, whether she's going to target them or whether she's off to try to do something else. Mostly, yeah. She seems to just want them out of the way, so...
Yeah, doubt we've seen the last of her, but it seems that she's not, at least not an immediate threat.
Right.
They do have some breathing room.
Yeah, so first they're going to get all the junk off the beach to make sure that it doesn't hurt any humans.
And, oh, I didn't really go to it in the recap, but the devastated town with all the shop fronts broken and bits of hand scattered all over the place. I mean, when Stephen sort of goes on autopilot to Big Donut and finds out it's got no proper door or front, and of course there's no one there.
Yes, the lights aren't on. That's a great point because we've got the emotional fallout, but we've also got literal debris lying everywhere. Just this feeling like we're really looking at this aftermath, and they're giving us a whole episode to kind of digest that and realize this is not just, okay, that's a thing that happened and then they got over it. It's like we have this whole episode devoted to them cleaning up the pieces in more ways than one.
That was actually part of what convinced Steve and his dad was right, that things didn't just go back to normal 5 minutes afterwards. You can't just have the entire town rained on of lasers and hand pieces and go and get his double stack chocolate ring the next day.
Yeah. I hate thinking about like that Steven felt like he's just been through all of this stuff. He might be targeted by who knows how many bad gems. And his first thought is, I have to protect other people by separating myself from them. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't access somebody else for comfort, or I don't want to put that all on Connie or my dad or whatever, that I have, like you called him, what, 90s Batman?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That, you know, and he's like, he's a kid and he feels like he has to do this, that this is all landed on him and he's not a child. He's a crystal gem. And that means all of this heavy stuff.
And even for an adult, this is a lot to suddenly take on. And he, yes, however old he's supposed to be, is not an adult.
Yeah, it's a little bit scary because, you know, this is really the first time, I think, that you've seen something on this scale where he's having to deal with homeworld. He's having to deal with enemies of the status or whatever that, and then, you know, knowing that these other battles are probably in the future, near future, or relatively near future, these things are hanging over his head. And, you know, he's not, no, the gems aren't really asking him how they're doing or how he's doing. They're thinking like that too. They're like, well, this is coming up. We all have to fight. And, you know, he's very young. This is his first time dealing with that. It's, yeah, it's just the juxtaposition, I guess, for me, of seeing not only did he go through that, but then he feels like he shouldn't or can't talk to his best friend about that. You know, someone who has been willing to help him in the past.
In a way, he's doing to Connie what the other three were doing to him a few episodes ago.
I think so, yeah.
Including that, the locals don't really have the option to just be shut out of it, because as we saw this time, you know, the town was still devastated. There was still debris and breakage everywhere. And
yeah,
if homeworld gems come for Earth again, they're not going to spare the denizens of Beach City.
Right. They might have to evacuate again and again and again until they finally decide this isn't worth living here.
So shutting everyone out won't actually help, and certainly isn't any good for him, and probably isn't much good for them if he's not actually interacting with them.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. So I was also worried that he was going to throw his phone. I think I've mentioned before that I hate that. But when he talked to Ronaldo, I guess you're right that he kind of made a little more sense than usual. But then Ronaldo is seeing himself as this dark and brooding figure. Like, Ronaldo, you're just a weird conspiracy nerd. You're not like Steven.
He makes sense in most of it, except for applying all this to himself.
Yes, the burden of being friends with us. Is that what you tell yourself, Ronaldo? Is that everyone else would be in danger if they knew the truth?
He's probably already concocted a way in which all this was about the Great Diamond Authority trying to shut down his blog.
You know, you see him at the end dragging away a piece of that ship, and I'm just thinking, somebody who was like a serious conspiracy nut or was trying to track down truths about aliens or whatever, they'd probably take that home to their lab and analyze it. He's probably going to make an anime sword out of it or something.
Yeah. Or knowing some of his luck, it's some piece of the ship which is basically just a chunk. Nothing that actually proves anything.
Space metal. And it's green. So he'll make a space sword. Maybe.
I liked Mayor Dewey megaphoning at Ongen and his dad at the end, just kind of sitting there staring strangely at him while he's megaphoning at these two people, because that's what he does.
Yeah, he needs a megaphone to yell at two people who won't talk back to him in English. It's funny.
But that little montage was a nice way of showing. And the people survive. Life will go on for them. They're getting their stuff back together. They're doing sweeping. Mr. Smiley is, well, smiling, jingling his keys. He's off back to work. Mayor Dewey is megaphoning. They're getting Big Donut back up and running. the pizza family are wandering around getting their life back together.
Mm-hmm. They seem to be pretty resilient.
Which I think is also a nice way of showing, okay, Stephen, these people, give them some credit. They can handle themselves.
Yeah. So I usually hate that trope. I think this show did it very well. I usually really hate the trope that people think that they can't have relationships and that, you know, the Batman thing, like you were calling it, like a dark hero or whatever. Because, I mean, Stephen is the last thing you would think. He's a dark hero who must go it alone. Like, he's the friendship and relationships person. He's the heart of the team. You would never expect a solitary hero like from him. So I'm really glad though that Connie understood that and that she kind of pushed her way into the situation and, you know, she wanted to know if he was all right. She seemed like if he was really going to push it and say it to her face that he didn't want to be friends, she would turn around and go home. But she didn't believe him, and she knew kind of that she was maybe dealing with someone who had just been through some trauma, and she realized she kind of had to push a little bit to be there for him because he was not in that mindset that he was willing to accept that, or that he felt like it would be selfish of him to accept that from her. So I'm really relieved that he has someone like her.
Yeah, and it's a very Stephen thing to do, I think, to skip straight from 0 to 100 with no intermediate. Oh, maybe we should involve the humans a bit less, straight through to, I must cut off all contact and family and friends and loved one and mortal interactions.
Yeah, if he had actually tried to do that, I mean, I'm glad we didn't have like a 5-episode arc where he tries to do that and finally reconciles with her. But, you know, like the idea that he wouldn't even tell her, he would just like not take her phone calls, that would suck. But, you know, he was trying to figure out what to do, and that was his reaction.
Yeah, and yeah, it's believable coming from Stephen. Objectively, it's probably not the right decision at this point, but he doesn't have the benefit of sitting back and watching himself on TV.
Right. And then, of course, he is understanding the we of the moment to be the Crystal Gems, and they have always been pretty isolated. They don't interact that much with the humans. So, I don't know, I guess he was feeling like, oh, it was us that got attacked. We are the group that needs to band together and go forward with this. So, you know, it's safer for everyone if I just focus on my destiny. I have a destiny. Can't be with you anymore, he says to Connie. That was just like a punch in the heart when he sent her that text, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I like that she was wise enough to literally call him out.
Yeah.
Because if he meant that, he wouldn't just drop her a text.
Yeah. No, I think that's true. She knows him. She understands him. And she knows that that's not how he would tell her if he just wanted to not see each other. He must be going through something. I loved while he was singing the little montage of the photos he had of her on his phone. It was just so cute.
Yeah. Well, I love the one of Connie reading on the jetty.
Yeah. And then she sees him and then she makes face. This little montage there. It's also a peculiar one of them sitting at a table underneath like a taxidermy moose or something.
Yeah.
I think it was. And Connie seems intrigued and Stephen seems kind of upset and disturbed in the picture. Like, who took the picture?
I'd wondered that too.
That's cute. It's very interesting how that was the whole, like him interacting with his phone in the whole scene was very like tied in. The writers and artists used the phone very well to show kind of what was going through his head. And we had a traditional montage where he's just like thinking about the stuff that he saw. But then there was this phone montage that he was controlling while he was singing about it. It was very cool. Hmm.
And so. Connie still has a, even for the time, somewhat old-fashioned flip phone, probably because her parents don't want to have any bells and whistles and internets and things.
Yeah, that's right. I believe the phone design is still the same one that we saw in, was it Fusion Cuisine when she got a phone call? Yeah, from her mom. And
oh, yeah.
Garnet said she was Mom Universe. I think it's the same like sort of flip phone type thing where I guess they showed it on winter forecast as well, but even has a real like up-to-date smartphone and he has text capability and phone call capability, but probably not internet phone. That's pretty consistent with what we know of her parents' parenting style.
Yeah.
Seems.
And Pearl's all, your communication device. And I was like, you know what a phone is.
Why is your communication device playing that song? Yeah. She was very Pearl this episode when she lied to Connie and said, I don't understand your human relationship. So goodbye.
And then just stays there.
That was really just nice, awkward gems thing. But earlier when they were talking about the fence that they used to have, they did used to have a fence. We saw it in Story for Steven.
Yes, I remembered that.
Owl
mode amethyst was perched upon it.
The sign that said, keep out, please. Yep. So I guess they never put the fence back up after Mr. Universe wrecked it.
And Garnet wanted neither fence nor moat, maybe in a there's no putting the genie back in the bottle kind of way.
Yeah, I mean, how are they going to have any more beach parties where people walk around, and how's the mail guy going to deliver the mail?
And she's probably also thinking, we've just half devastated the town and we already knew corrupted gem animal monsters were coming up every other week. So I don't think we can just put up a fence and have some not know stuff anymore.
True. Plus they can at least look through the fence and see.
But Garnet's possibly well thinking, no, the time for putting up things to isolate the humans has passed. That ship has flown. Or in this case, that ship has exploded all over the beach.
Yeah. I guess her reasoning was, she said, Steven needs to see his father and his friends. So what she didn't say is, how's he going to get to the big donut if there's a fence? He could just climb it.
I was going to say, they're obviously thinking of a pretty impressive fence.
Yeah, she said with barbed wire. Pearl was saying barbed wire.
Yeah, a bit too cheerily there, Pearl. Calm down.
An amethyst wanted a moat.
Yeah, I like the idea. This has come up before, and
yes,
it's just that amethyst won't be the crocodile no matter what she says now.
Yeah, she'll probably be the crocodile and jump in and hang out for half an hour, but then she'll just want to get out, go whip a dumpster in half or something. I can't see amethyst guarding anything. She doesn't have the patience. She'd be like, I'm bored.
You'd be like, oh, a seagull, and a bunch of people just walk past her.
Yeah, or she'd invite the invaders in for, like, video games. I loved the way Steven's face was drawn when he revealed to Connie that he was crying.
Oh, he was crying so hard. His face was crumpled.
He was a little mess of Steven.
Oh, his black eye, too, I think, served to illustrate his internally damaged state as much as external.
Yeah, I had to remember to keep drawing it. Yeah.
One of the longer lasting injuries, but this episode actually takes place over a pretty short space of time.
Yeah, I think Sadie still is being drawn with that scar she got in an island adventure.
I kind of assumed that was a permanent scar.
Yeah, so it's not really an injury, it's a scar. That's different.
But yeah, normally a lot of Stephen's injuries are just kind of comical batterings that go away by the next scene. And even the one time he took a sustained injury, he had started to shrink even in story pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So I think this was a way of saying, no, this is serious. It may even be in story a more serious injury to get hit that hard that his gem-human combined healing powers can't just clear it up as easily.
Yeah. Well, too bad he can't lick his own eyeball.
Oh, don't give him ideas.
I guess his healing powers aren't working right now anyway.
I can already see Amethyst challenging people to lick their own eyeballs.
Well, the last time that he tried shape-shifting, it didn't go so well for him, so.
No, he's probably stuck a pin in that for now.
Yeah, stick his tongue out, trying to make it long enough to lick his eye, and it'll turn into a cat. Cat got your tongue, literally? Oh, God.
Yeah, cat tongue is not the sequel anyone wants to see.
No.
I know that people divided over cat fingers. I can't imagine this would bring everyone together in love of that episode.
Oh, boy.
Well, wait, I have loads more probing questions to ask.
What do you think about if I throw a question at you, a probing question?
Probe time.
Yeah, Yeah, I guess kind of on a more serious note for this. So if you have Greg and Connie in this episode, kind of focus on them getting their disclosure, their debriefing. So they're humans who care a lot about, you know, Steven, and they don't have any gem powers. So, like, do you think there's a good way for, like, a good way forward for, like, one or both of them could be more involved with supporting his gem missions, and, like, and should they?
Greg has had a kind of tiny bit more involvement just over the first season compared to his initial position, because it used to be, well, gem stuff, see ya.
Yeah.
And, I mean, even just recently trying to decipher Lapis' message was more involvement than he probably would have seen beforehand. So he, I think, is already kind of doing that, and probably, I'd say he knows his limits as a support role. I mean, I think that no gem stuff for me wasn't just personal, whoa, this is too freaky thing, although there's a bit of that too. But I think he also recognizes that when it comes to fighting magical beasts from space and all the rest, there's only so much he can do.
Yeah.
So emotional support he can certainly offer, and maybe the odd bit of skill like deciphering a message, but he has no fighting skills that we know of, and if he does have any, he's kept quiet about them, that's for sure. He has no powers. He has no place in gem society other than knowing the ones we know.
Right.
It doesn't seem to be, well, could just be the homeworld gems have no idea that Rose took him as a lover, boyfriend, husband, whatever.
Right.
But they don't seem to have any real, I say they, we've only seen the couple so far, but no one seems interested in finding out if there was a human that Rose somehow did things with to make herself baby boy.
Right. And nobody's looking at him like, oh, you killed her.
Yeah.
You must be a great warrior.
Or, you know, you tainted her legacy by daring to touch the great Rose Quartz while you were a mere creature of carbon.
Yeah. Mm.
But I think, yeah, for the moment, Greg at least is right to keep his limits. And of course, more things could be happening in which he could do more. But I think being emotionally involved yet practically standoffish is the right thing for him, at least from what we've seen so far.
Yeah, last time he tried, he broke his leg, right?
Yeah, so there's another round of, oh, you're fleshy and don't have healing powers and can't just go into a rock if you get a serious injury.
Right, he cannot.
Connie, she could still be a bit of a up-and-comer, still finding her limits, in that we also have seen no sort of battle skills from her, but she's, as far as we can tell, the same age as Steven, give or take. So probably still young enough and eager to learn enough to come into this world fresh. So she could, I mean, if she learned a bunch about gem society and gem culture, she could probably be incredibly valuable. She could probably keep a lot of that stuff in her head more than the others do. And we've seen her adapt her tennis skills to sword fighting. Mm-hmm. So that could be adapted further, and she could actually become a definite practical battle mate, if not actual full-fledged warrior. So I think, this will sound like a total slight on Greg, I think Connie has more potential to be working with at the moment. And
so either as an intelligence officer or as a sword person.
Yeah, it sounds a bit patronizing to say she's still young and willing to learn, but she is still young and willing to learn. She's still finding what she can and can't do as a person, let alone in the capacity of someone who's regularly with magic space rock people.
I think that's an advantage and a disadvantage in some ways, especially since she has overprotective parents.
Well, yeah, there's that. And it is both an advantage and a disadvantage not to know your limits, of course, because then you can exceed them. You can exceed them, but you can also hit them hard and come a cropper. So it would serve her to be careful. But if I were her, yeah, finding out more ways I can be of any additional further practical help. Not that being Stephen's best friend isn't a value in and of itself, because he's a hybrid chosen one legacy of his mother, still needs, you know, emotional support from someone on his level, and she's bringing that.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
I guess the morals kind of her fighting are similar to Stephen, because they're both minors, they're both children. So You know, on some level, they should be protected by adults. But if they can help, then there's this whole plucky child protagonist thing that they could both kind of adopt.
And as we've seen this week, there's only so far you can protect the other people, well, when they're going to blow up a spaceship in your town.
Right. Yeah. Kind so of at this point, Connie is willing to listen. She's very involved, but so far not actively helping any of his missions, really.
In fact, continuing the Batman analogy, Connie as a kind of oracle would definitely work out, at least as far as what I'm seeing.
Mm-hmm. Plus, there is the fact that she has fused with him.
Yes. In some ways, she literally knows him better than anyone.
Mm-hmm.
In some ways, better than he himself does, if only because she can think more clearly than he can most of the time.
She does seem to have the brain cell between them. Yeah, she's more practical, more pragmatic, more able to analyze a situation. I mean, when they were trapped in a bubble together, he's just like, we'll be free if we get busted apart on the roller coaster. And she's like, but then we'll be on the roller coaster. So.
I mean, there are times of being a clearer thinker than Stephen isn't a high bar to cross, but
100% true. So I guess the question remains kind of, should she do that? Like, could she? Probably, but should she? I have mixed feelings about a young, squishy human child getting involved in gem battles, but I feel that way about Stephen too.
Yeah, well, Stephen, it's a bit inevitable, as we've seen.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, if she were to take on the intelligence, the oracle role, then she would not literally be in battles. So that would be one way to balance it out. And, of course, the flip side of that is if people are going to risk you by blowing up spaceships over your town anyway, then some might say, child or otherwise, you should at least try to do something about that if you can.
Right. Though I guess technically she's not from Beach City, but she's close enough that she can, you know.
Yeah, I'd say she's close enough, or at least around enough, that she is not entirely risk-free.
Yeah.
Especially if the rest of the gems, the homeworld gems plan, involved the entire planet Earth anyway.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if it's a planet-wide thing or even just an area-wide thing, she'd be in danger. But it seemed like, you know, she didn't know what was going on. She hadn't been evacuated, you know, so I don't know how they decide how much to evacuate, though. Like, how do you know it'll be just Beach City that's in trouble, right?
Yeah. And also, with one of those things that in real life, child warriors, child soldiers are seen as a horrible, horrible thing. In cartoons, it's just something that happens.
Right.
It's one of those ethical gulfs that just kind of goes with the genre a bit.
I think so, especially since in the context of a show, you look at Connie's parents and you'll be like, her parents are too worried. But then in real life, you'd probably be like, yeah, don't let your kid run around with some weirdo who is going to expose them to monsters that are going to try to drown them or whatever. Yeah, I probably don't go over his house anymore. He almost drowned, or he almost got hit by a robot shooty thing, or whatever else she's been in danger of.
Yeah, and I guess I'm coming from Transformers fandom as well, where not only do the kids, human squishy kids, get right up in the middle of battles, they could just get accidentally squashed so much easier. At least the gems are about the same size as them and are unlikely just to take a step back and flatten them.
Yeah, probably that's not how any of them will become a casualty.
So I guess I've sort of got that cartoon child fighting risk matrix of, well, you know, she's far more safer than if she was with Transformers.
Yeah. Yeah. So far, closest thing to a Transformer type thing that we've seen is that space hand.
Yeah. I do wonder if they're sort of building up to some kind of, there's this hand ship and an arm ship and it all sticks together.
With a gigantic gem. Voltron.
Yeah. That's what I was looking for.
Yeah, I mean, that's the first thing you got to think about. If there's a hand, where's the rest of it?
But I'll say again, I did like how what the hand did kind of corresponded with what was going on in the story, like flicking out the escape pod and using the finger guns to shoot lasers.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I wonder what happens if Peridot tries to do some of those commands now. Now the ship is wrecked, it probably wouldn't respond at all, or maybe it would start to try to fire very dangerous stuff with whatever remains.
Or just spark out and make smoke.
Mm-hmm. But she can probably still make that control panel with her weird floaty fingers.
The Peridot has seemed quite confident so far, but everything we've seen on her, either she's been at a distance or has a gigantic hand ship backing her up.
Right.
So we don't know how she'd go with an actual physical confrontation, especially since the closest one we saw had her tied up in a whip pretty much instantly.
Right, by just Amethyst by herself.
Yeah.
Just sitting on her. Yeah, she does not strike me as a fighter. And that's probably also why her first thought when her spaceship room gets breached is she reaches for a tool. Yeah. You know,
I've kind of got the impression, I don't think they've said it as, no, they haven't said it, but I've got the impression she's kind of a pen pusher, and it just so happens that her job lucked onto the important planet, which has a kindergarten and a possibly reincarnated rose quartz on it.
Yeah, she probably had no idea she was going to stumble across this.
I think she's middle management at best. I don't see her as being terribly far up the ladder.
Yeah. Her first threat was, I'm reporting this. So
yeah. Well, it's going to go in your permanent record.
You're going to the principal's office right now.
I was a teacher. Do you know permanent record isn't even a thing?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. If you said that to Steven and Pearl, they would both be upset. The other two, whatever. We're just going to punch you. Put that on my permanent record. And put this rude gesture on my permanent record as well, courtesy of Amethyst.
If Amethyst had a permanent record, she'd want to read it and relive all the cool stuff she'd done.
Yeah, she'd pull it, she'd read it, she'd laugh, and then she'd eat it.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be funny. Leo?
Any requests?
Want to talk about music?
Yes, I was about to say, we did have an honest-to-goodness song this week.
We did. We sure did. It is called Full Disclosure, although I don't know if it is unofficially also titled Stephen's Lament or if that was a mistake, but I used to see it sometimes called Stephen's Lament, but officially it's called Full Disclosure, just the same.
Yeah, well, Stephen's Lament pretty much does what it says.
Yeah. So, yeah. What'd you think?
I liked the song, but I also feel it kind of didn't add anything mood-wise that we hadn't already reached through the dialogue and acting.
Uh-huh.
I didn't any more feel Stephen's desperation and such than the rest of the episode already was giving to me.
Okay.
I don't think it was bad. I don't think it was wrong to include it, but I also think if somehow you had to do this episode in a minute or two shorter and you lost the song, I don't think it would horribly damage the tone.
I've heard Rebecca Sugar talk about like the thought process of why, like the justification of including a song. And usually she says if she's going to include a song where in context the character is singing, like that they're bursting into song about their emotions, it's not an in-universe song for some other reason. She wants them to start at one place and end the song in a different place. And even though this song kind of does that, because at the beginning he's just, what am I going to do? And you're so important to me. And then at the end, he's kind of like, you're better off not knowing about this. And he's kind of resolved to not tell her. But we kind of get that from the stuff that happens before and the stuff that happens after. So I guess you're kind of right about that. Is we could have dropped the song and still had the episode.
Yeah, not that it was a bad song, not that it didn't do what it was supposed to do. I just didn't feel it added anything that wasn't already there.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe because it is kind of a familiar trope to a lot of us, that a lot of us just don't need help through that.
Right. And as the opening of season two, it's almost a little bit recappy. It has a chance to show us these literal clips from the previous show to show us what he's dealing with. And that's not quite as practical in what ended up happening is it aired the next day.
Well, yeah, I remember you telling me that before and I was thinking, oh, this is a great opportunity to recap yesterday.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess if you did miss it, that's fine, but...
Right.
I mean, we've talked before how they generally don't do previously on Steven Universe. So the extent to which they do or don't do that and maybe when they should do or not do it more or less is still a bit up in the air.
Yeah.
I mean, part of that being, of course, they have 11 and a half minutes to play with. Hardly got enough time to get through this week's episode, let alone last week's.
Yeah. I liked that the way they incorporated the ringtone was cool.
Also what I was about to say next, where very synced this week. But yeah, and even though it fit the song, it sounded a lot like a ringtone, or like a, or rather sounded like a ringtone from some years beforehand, because at the time ringtones were pretty much anything except ringtones.
You know, I mean, it's been like, I don't know, almost 12 years, I think, since I got a phone capable of having customizable ringtones, and I set pop songs and stuff. I mean, they've had real songs for ringtones for a long time. So yeah, you're right. Definitely kind of almost a generic little chiptune-y type thing that would come with the phone.
I guess also makes it clear to viewers, this is a phone ringing and not just part of the music.
Right. Yeah. They did have that at the end of Jailbreak. They used that, and then they used it in this. Unsurprisingly, I have it on my phone. I set it for one of my friends.
Cute.
And he has, from when I call him, he has the giant woman song, which is meant to be ironic because I'm not very giant. He says, it's a Steven Universe reference and a short joke all in one. Thanks. So other than that, we don't really have music besides Greg's relaxing music CD, which is not his relaxing music CD. That was funny.
Oh, Greg.
I don't know.
Label your discs.
I don't know if it has a title. It might have a title, but I don't know what it is. It has one. The noise that blared forth from his speakers. Oh, well.
No, Greg was all but melting with distress.
Oh, goodness. Some very good opportunities for Paul Vallejo to draw some Greg faces.
Yeah, I recognized Paul's hand in this. I didn't catch the credits, but I figured even if he wasn't involved, this was his influence.
It was indeed a Raven and Paul episode. Oh, they got to draw the episodes before and after Jailbreak. Is that right? Yeah, I think that's right. So.
I think it's them that also tends to make Steven not actually shapeshift, but change shape per animation more than the others.
Yeah, he's like a weird beanbag Steven. Mm. Yeah. Somewhere in season 3, I think, there's an episode that Paul does all by himself. So everything, by definition, is a Paul face. But Raven has some really dynamic animation as well. So they really take advantage of that in having Steven's "Still Want to Be Friends" face on one of their episodes. Well, I don't have any food for you, so I can talk stressed. About other fat food if you want.
Yeah, he was too stressed to eat this week. That's how stressed he was.
Well, he was trying to go to the big donut, but nobody was there.
Yeah, and when he was in his lonely guardian phase, he probably decided he was going to eat dry protein rations or something.
Oh, my goodness. Just energy drinks and multivitamins. Those military meals.
Amethyst would love MREs, though. So,
she would. She would eat also the packaging.
Oh, yeah. She wouldn't even rip it open or add the water or whatever. Anything else you're going to do, just jump. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Where's the beef one?
It would activate in whatever her gem stomach is.
Well, yeah, after she ate it, she'd probably do a sort of inflate for a second as it all activated and then return to normal.
Yeah, she'd look like when she ate that piece of cloud.
I still love the cloud eating.
Yes. I got hit by an airplane. Cute. Yeah, even though this was mostly a Steven crisis, it was nice to have those little pieces of interaction with the gems.
Mm. Yeah, I think it was a nice counterpoint that we didn't go too deep into them. We were mostly dealing with their sort of everyday surface characters.
Yeah.
Which is, apart from being fun, also added to this is Steven isolating himself.
Yeah.
Because
well said.
Yeah, he didn't sit down and have a big emotional talk with any of them.
No, he did not. There wasn't a lot of decompression with them, unless it was off screen, which it didn't feel like it had been. Didn't feel like it happened.
Well, I think the first they heard of the "I'm cutting myself off" thing was when we saw it and Connie coming up the stairs.
Yeah.
I'm learning new things all the time.
I should factoid you. Description was Steven tries to avoid Connie so he doesn't have to tell her about his most harrowing adventure.
I guess that does it. I mean, it does sort of skip ahead in the plot, but this isn't really a plot of twists and turns.
No, it is, as far as the Steven Universe episodes go, it's pretty tropey, even though it doesn't do what that trope sometimes still does. And as we discussed, this was the last episode of the first Steven bomb, so we're through with our first Steven bomb. Mm-hmm. I think they include this episode on season one DVDs and stuff. I'm pretty sure they do that. Might even be the next one too.
I'll be able to safely look at the back of the season one DVD properly next time I've seen all of season one, so I can see if the episode list includes it.
Yay. One of the cool factoidy things is the title card. You know how it changes depending on what's going on with the environment.
I noticed that.
Real over the beach. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I have noticed the title
card. Left of the spaceship just scattered.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, often the title card sort of goes back and forth between a few standards, which means I often notice and am impressed when it does something a bit different, like when it's raining or like when it's just post-chaos in this one.
Yes. Yeah, it seems to be setting the stage for at least what time of day it's going to be. But since pretty much most things start and end where they're doing their thing on the beach, it's a different color scheme most of the time. Yeah. So I guess it really jumps out at you when it isn't. I think the only thing I have left for a factoidy thing is I wanted to tell you something funny from Ronaldo's blog.
Oh, good one.
What I told you last week for the jailbreak thing, some of that was most of this entry where he's talking about how he thinks these aliens are going to hollow out the earth and stuff. But he added to the end of that entry and said, also, I saw Stephen hanging out at the old brooding hill. He looked sad. I think I gave him some good advice. Oh, Ronaldo.
I think he works better in small diluted doses.
Yeah, he was a good, I don't know what you'd call that. He was a good sort of downer in responding to Stephen about how people like them just have to isolate for the benefit of others. Look at them down there, Stephen.
Which, as is often the case in this show, is very mood-feeding because he's saying wise things, but also funny because he's completely missed the point that it's nothing to do with him.
Yeah.
Go check out our merch table.
So I guess I can show you my merchandise and we'll be wrapping this one, huh?
Yeah, let's merch.
I think you've seen this before, but since we had a strong reliance on phones for this one, I'll show you that I have an official Steven Universe phone case, which I got from the Cartoon Network website. It is a Garnet phone
Garnet
case.
Star.
Yeah, so it's got like a little pink star, half star on the side. Incidentally, my opening screen is the, you can't really see that, clear this. When I start my phone up, the starter screen is the crystal gem door. It's kind of cute.
Oh, that's cool.
It's got Garnet's opening indication on it, I guess. And it's got a background. When you actually open it, it's her room. So it's like, you're going into Garnet's room.
Oh, well, mine's the clothesline hand.
You've got that now? Oh, wait, I can't see it. Let me move my window. Yay, you've got a Steven Universe thing on yours.
Yeah, I just captured it from the actual screen thing. So
my previous phone, I actually had a fan-made phone case, which looks like this. My friend bought this for me, so of course I had to put it on there.
Ooh, but that's a nice picture of it's the gang hanging out on aforementioned hand. Oh, and Amethyst is so cute. She's curled up like a little puppy or kitten.
Yes, she's relaxing on top of the thumb or something like that. This is kind of hard to see, but I'll post one on the video when we do this processing. But the art is, if I'm not mistaken, I think the artist's name was Bridget Underwood or something like that, but I'll correct myself if I'm wrong. But she's the artist of one of the first, number one of the Steven Universe comics. So that art is from a Steven Universe comic. It's from official merch, but the phone case is not officially released. But, you know, my friend bought it for me, so of course I used it until I got a different phone and it didn't fit. So those are my phone cases.
Cool.
And now you've seen them. It's really cute art. I like when it's relatively, when fan art or licensed, you know, merchandise that's designed with the characters. I like it when it's really close to on model, but also has enough like sort of accents that it's different enough that you're like, oh, not just a still from the show. You know, that's kind of cool and refreshing. So that's my merch for this time. Hooray for phones, which they do a good job incorporating technology into like a modern show, that they use their phones the way that people do.
Yeah, like as we said before, is something even a lot of TV writers now haven't wrapped their heads around.
Yeah, it does seem like a lot of people are still trying to get cell phones and the convenience that smartphones offer out of the plot, because it ruins the plot if you have a GPS or you can call someone to warn them of danger or something. So they just make the smartphone not work. You know, you could just throw your phone into the sea, but Steven did not do that.
Which I also kind of wonder, had they not known he'd needed a few scenes later, would he actually have done it then?
Always makes me nervous when people are standing there about to drop their phone into something. And I'm like, no, don't do that. I think that my expert opinion is that they continue to do a good job incorporating technology into the show as it goes on. Anything else about Full Disclosure?
No, I think we've fully disclosed on it for now.
I think you're right. So the next episode we'll be covering next time is called Joyride.
Well, I hope that's literal. They could use a bit of joyment.
I agree. So let's see where they're going in the next episode, Joyride. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Ivy and Daria on Not So Giant Women.
You can find episodes of the show in video form by looking up Not So Giant Women on YouTube
or in audio form at anchor.fm/notsogiantwomen or your podcatcher of choice.
You can also find us on Facebook. Audio production by Daria.
Video production and music by Ivy.
Daria can also be heard on Podsploitation, the Ozploitation podcast.
And Ivy at her Steven Universe fan blog at love-takes-work.tumblr.com.
Steven Universe was created by Rebecca Sugar and remains property of Cartoon Network.
No infringement is intended.
Gosh, it's really pouring rain outside. Oh, Florida.